Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Caitlin Handerhan, Executive Director of the Public Policy Fund at Penn State Barron.
Welcome to Barron Talks. I'm Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor of Penn State Erie, the Barron College. And this week, our guest is Caitlin Handerhan, the Executive Director of the Public Policy Fund here at Penn State Barron, that was funded very generously by Reverend Charles Brock. Welcome here today, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we really appreciate it. There's a lot to talk about today, but I was looking at your bio. And interesting, you went to Cornell University, and then somehow you ended up here in Erie, Pennsylvania. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up here in Erie, and how you ended up directing this public policy fund?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I am not a native of Erie. I actually grew up in Mercer, Pennsylvania. I moved to Erie when I went to do my undergraduate coursework at Mercyhurst University and had a really great experience with the town of Erie itself and really got the sense that this was a place on the rise and there was a lot of exciting things happening. So I did my MPA at Cornell, and after those 2 years, I sort of sat back and thought about where do I want to start my career, what kind of city do I want to live in, where do I want to contribute, you know, my time. And Erie was always at the top of my list. So I moved back, was very fortunate to get a job, and very quickly moved into running campaigns and doing political consulting work, which is really one of my true passions, that intersection between campaign work and policy work. And then I was very fortunate to land this job at Penn State Barron, and it's been a full year, and it's been fantastic.
Well, I agree with you. I think Erie is a wonderful place. There's a tremendous amount going on, and you're right at the heart of what's happening. But let's talk a little bit about your interest in, before we go into the Public Policy Fund, I'd love to hear about, you know, why did you decide to start running political campaigns? Was this an idea that you've thought about since you were a little kid, or is it something you picked up as you were in college? Where'd it come from?
So I really have to give my parents a lot of credit for this, because even as a kid, they always had the news on. We were always discussing current events. I always was pretty politically attuned. And when I was 16, I was actually appointed to one of the party's state committees and started the Young Democrats, and was really involved with politics at a very, very young age. And I always say that if you like running campaigns, it's all you want to do. It takes a very kind of special crazy to really enjoy that campaign process. So I am that sort of crazy. I enjoy it. I love it. And being able to marry, you know, politics with policy has really been a career goal. And I'm feel so grateful to be able to do that.
So how many campaigns have you run?
Five.
Wow.
Four, five. Yeah. Run like at the head of two major ones, but I've been involved with running the communications or some of the logistics on at least five. Yeah.
So aspirations to continue to do this and run, you know, more and more and more significant campaigns in the future?
I don't know about that. I'm really enjoying my stint in higher ed right now, so I'm okay to take a little break from the campaign trail.
I'm certainly not asking if you're leaving Barron. We're happy to have you here. Well, let's switch back to the Public Policy Fund. So this is a great initiative that we started several years ago. Really just got up and running, you know, in the last year or so when you came on board. Tell us what is this fund? What do we do? What are the objectives?
Sure. The Public Policy Fund has three main objectives. One is to increase dialogue about the public policy issues that are most salient to Erie. We also try to place students in policy-oriented internships to really give them that experiential, hands-on learning. And finally, it's to promote research, whether that's supporting faculty research on policy initiatives, or we have a program called the Council of Academic Advisors that actually works with policymakers in the area, and we provide them with the expertise and the research that maybe they're not equipped to provide themselves to help them make decisions. So those are sort of the three main areas, and I think we've done a pretty okay job of connecting students with the policymakers and getting that going this year.
I think so. So could you explain further, how does this Council of Academic Advisors work?
Sure. So I actually am the liaison between the university and the community members, decision makers. This is open to anyone who wants to take advantage of it. For example, we've worked with the Office of the County Executive on past projects where they approach us, they approach Penn State, and they have a policy question that maybe they don't have enough research on, they want to know best practices, maybe implementation procedures. And as a council or within the policy fund, we find faculty on campus who are fluent in those issues. And we prepare a report, a memo, a presentation, and present it to the decision maker so that they can make a really informed decision.
Now, are you looking at issues of, you know, what sort of issues? Is it Rust Belt revitalization, economic development? What are the things that they're coming to you with?
Anything. We'll take anything. The one that really sticks out was an issue with the county prison system, looking at day reporting centers as a way to alleviate overpopulation in the prison. So this was a project with the county, and they approached us and said that they would like to study how do day reporting centers work? What are best practices? What are costs, benefits? And we were able to put together a memo last year on that, and they've actually, I believe a month ago, began implementing this procedure. So now inmates now report to a day center as opposed to a full prison term.
So it's really, you know, one of the things that I find really beneficial, and I think that surprises the outside world, so to speak, is that our students and our faculty have impact. So that project you just talked about, I'm assuming our students worked on that and that they were part of doing the research.
Absolutely. There was two political science students that were involved with that. And as it was in the news in the past few weeks, it was really rewarding to be able to share those links with them and show them the real world impact of their work. You know, a lot of people think that a political science degree is only applicable in a classroom, but really there's, when you bring policy into it, it's, you know, endless opportunity.
Well, when you talk to our students and they're thinking about studying political science, what questions are on their mind? What advice do you give them?
A lot of them want to know how they can get involved in the community, which I think is really important and really special. You know, I think sometimes college students have this reputation of just sort of moving to a town, not registering to vote there, kind of going to class, and then moving away. And one thing that I think is really unique to Barron students is this interest to be involved beyond Barron. I've had a lot of students approach me wanting internships, wanting to connect with policymakers or nonprofits in the community. And that to me is really rewarding. That's, I think, it's a benefit to our students, but certainly a benefit to Erie as a whole as well.
Well, as you know, I believe greatly in this idea of experiential learning. I say it's not rocket science. It's at the heart of this open laboratory philosophy we have here on campus, which is to have our students and faculty engage in real world problems. And what we've found is that they're able to really address problems that otherwise people think maybe you need a graduate student or a practicing professional, but you're showing that they provide results. The county exec found this meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had subsequent projects come from that, which I think is the biggest testament to our work, that it wasn't just one project. You know, they've come back again and again, and we're expanding to other decision makers, really building a name for Barron in terms of a policy think tank.
And the other, you know, when you look at our graduates, we've got some pretty well-known graduates who've come through our political science program. And I'll just name two. Brent Vernon is the head of Governor's Action Team in Harrisburg, very influential. And then Senator Guy Reschenthaler was just recently elected to Congress, first congressperson from Penn State Barron.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think that's a testament to the program. You know, you have a lot of great faculty working in the political science department, and I think where the policy fund can contribute is to continue this faculty-student engagement, you know, and really work with the students on policy research or projects.
What is the career path typically? Is it that they want to pursue a degree in a law degree? They want to go on to get a master's in public policy like you did? Well, what are the options after a student graduates with a degree in political science?
So I don't have all the stats in front of me, but I can tell you just from my experience and my own personal experience, most political science students come out of high school and they intend to go to law school. and that almost always changes. It's okay. Kind of a preconceived idea or a very narrow conception of what you can do with a political science degree. So one of the things that I try to work with students is not to discourage them from going to law school. If that's their path, that's their passion, do it. But I know myself, as an undergraduate, I thought I was going to law school, and then I discovered how much more you can do with this degree and the places it leads you. And I ended up doing a master's of public administration, and that has opened up so many doors for me. So I think part of the task here is to show students how their degree is useful in other ways besides a sort of traditional conception of the program.
So Caitlin, one of the things that you do with the Public Policy Fund is you host lecture series. And the one that you had this past spring seemed particularly impactful and relevant to the Erie community to me. It was focused on Rust Belt revitalization, learning lessons from Detroit. How did you get such a good group of people to come here to Erie?
Well, last spring there was an article in the New York Times about Detroit and how it had pursued these revitalization efforts through sort of unconventional means. The piece was written by Rafe Larson, who's a novelist and also a New York Times contributor. And he wrote about how Detroit does these slow roll bike rides. So as soon as I was reading this article, I thought, well, we do that here in Erie. You know, that's, you know, the Cycle Fest is something that's really big here. And so as I was reading, I just kept seeing these connections between Detroit and Erie, Detroit and Erie. And, you know, both being former Rust Belt cities that are reinventing themselves in this decade, I thought that there was a lot of connection. So I actually just on a whim reached out to Rafe Larson's publicist, and they connected me, and he was really interested in Erie. Ironically, he had heard a lot about the McBride Viaduct, mm-hmm. so he knew Erie because of that. And we were able to get him on a plane and bring him in for a talk, and he spent 2 days here and had a lot of meetings with decision makers, and we took him down to the co-working space downtown and really showed him what Erie is all about. And I wouldn't be surprised if he came back in the future to write a piece about Erie the way he did Detroit.
Well, that's a great story. Sometimes it's as simple as just reaching out. You know, if you don't ask, you don't get, and that shows it right there. So while Rafe was here you showed him around, do you think there was anything that he learned in Erie that he could take to other communities that he saw that was unique?
I think he saw that there's a lot more to Erie than meets the eye. You know, when we just drop in to Erie for a day, right? You don't really get a sense of what is going on. So in the 2 days that we had him here, I really tried to make sure that we got him, you know, sort of off of the State Street corridor, right? We got him on more than just campus and really showed him some of the projects and the great things that are happening in Erie. Now, unfortunately, he was here in March, so Presque Isle was not in mm-hmm. peak season. So he didn't really get our, you know, natural parks and beauty there, but I think we gave him a pretty good sense of what Erie truly is beyond that sort of stereotype.
And I do think the more that people can come here and see it who are influencers and can write the positive stories, of course, the better we're going to be as a community. Now, this fall, you switched gears with your lecture series, and what are you focusing on this fall?
So the theme for this fall is women in politics. 2018 has been sort of labeled as the year of the woman, and we wanted to capitalize on that, both in terms of our local elections and on a national stage as well. So we've had one event a month, and it's all been focused on women in politics, starting with sort of a historical look at the lecture was called Disorderly Women, which I just love that title. And then we moved on to a discussion with women on the ballot, and then a discussion after the election, sort of breaking down the midterm election results.
So what's your analysis of this midterm election here in 2018? What are your main takeaways?
It certainly was the year of the woman. We have a more representation in Congress than ever before, with 100 women elected. I think we saw some really interesting things happen. We had blue states that went red, and vice versa. You know, there were some states that we didn't anticipate to go the way that they did. But most notably, I think the biggest takeaway is that we're seeing for the first time a Congress that is more representative of the people it represents. You know, for example, Charisse David in Kansas's 3rd Congressional District is the first Native American woman and the first openly lesbian woman in Congress. And I think that the fact that that took until 2018 can be a little bit, you know, disheartening. But if you look at the flip side, we're making that progress.
Absolutely. Now, when you talk about disorderly women, one that I think about actually is that from this region who had such a huge impact was Ida Tarbell. And I'm just curious, have you ever studied Ida? Is it somebody that you bring up in your discussions or your classes with our students?
Unfortunately, it hasn't come up this semester. The course that I'm teaching this semester is a political theory class, so there's not much room for sort of contemporary discussions like that. But I definitely try to make sure that we get to those things in the lecture series.
You also run an organization called Emerge PA, is my understanding, where you help women run for office, or it's part of your consulting firm. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I wish I could say I ran Emerge PA. That's not entirely accurate. I am just on the board for that. So what Emerge PA does is they take a pool of candidates of women who are wanting to run for office, and it's a pretty rigorous interview process to get into the program. And then it's basically candidate school. So it's over multiple weeks in the spring into the summer. You don't have to currently be on the ballot, but it really gives you the tools to be successful once you are on the ballot. And it has featured women from all walks of life, you know, recent college graduates to someone who is retired and wanting to, you know, get involved in politics for the first time. So it's a really interesting program, and I've really enjoyed being a part of that.
I know there's a big difference between running a campaign and running for office. I'm going to put you on the spot. Is running for office an aspiration that you have?
I won't rule it out. At this point in my life, it's not something that I have the desire to do. I think I'm most impactful in other ways, but I wouldn't rule it out in the future.
Okay. I want to talk about the level of discourse in the country right now. And what I believe, and I think many do, is the need for rational, civil discourse that is truly fact-based. It seems like we're at a tough time, no matter what your political leanings are. Although you look back, and there are periods in our history where we've certainly had far more contentious times. I know that may be hard for people to believe. But, you know, is that analysis correct? Is it something we need to correct? And what do we do on a college campus to foster that?
I'm so glad you brought that up. That is sort of at the core of one of my personal goals with the Policy Fund, is to sort of combat this hyperpolarization that we're seeing in our climate. Too often people are not as informed as they should be or think that they are about politics. And one of the goals of the Policy Fund is to provide that information, you know, in a very bipartisan sort of completely unbiased way, and say, here's the facts about this policy or this issue, and let people come to a conclusion on their own. Too often people make decisions, I think, without having full information or, you know, getting it in 140 characters in a tweet. And to me, that's not the best way to make policy decisions or to formulate, you know, political opinion. And in my opinion, that's a big contributor to this hyperpolarization that we're seeing, that's not letting us talk to each other. Instead, we often talk at each other, and it's not productive.
Yeah, when I've had discussions with our students about this quite a bit in the last 6 months, several years even, and what surprises me is their statement that they don't have these discussions with each other unless they know the person agrees with them. And I think that that's just a statement that we need to do something about this. I think they'd like to, actually, is the sense that I get, that they would like to have a rational discussion, but it's something, it's an art that's lost. So how can we do something? How can we help our students approach this?
I'm afraid I don't have a grand scale solution, but I know in my own class, when we're debating issues, so for example, we were looking at the Constitution and the Second Amendment, and we were sort of debating the applicability of the Second Amendment in 2018. And I actually assigned students a side of the debate. I didn't let them choose. So often they were arguing in favor of something that they didn't necessarily personally agree with. And I think as much as we can challenge students to see things from a different perspective, to sort of gain that understanding and kind of understand that issue more fully, that's a good start.
I think you're absolutely right in that if we can get students to read deeper, actually, like you say, much more beyond 140 characters and think about it from a different perspective, it's a great, great opportunity. So I think when people think about public policy, maybe a certain vision comes into their mind, but there's a lot to it. There are a lot of different facets. So tell us about it. What are the different categories that of things that you look at, that you study?
The short answer to that is everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. Public policy impacts every part of your life, whether you realize it or not. Everything from environmental regulations to commerce and tax issues, healthcare policy, education. I think you're right. Often people think that public policy is just about government or how bureaucracy and government function. And while that's a part of it, it's so much more than that. And in terms of the issues that we look at in the policy fund, we focus on anything that's really germane to Erie, and that can be anything, whether it's looking at, smoking cessation policies with the health department or environmental regulation policies. We have some research going on campus about that. It's really anything.
Well, I think the thing that always impresses me about people who think deeply about public policy is there's one side, which is activism, which I just want to get something done, right? Yeah. But public policy, you really have to understand this whole system, how it works, and then try to get something into place that may not happen till it's 2, 3, 4 years later before you see a result, but then it has this long-term impact.
Yeah, I appreciate and I respect activists. I mean, I come from a bit of an activism background, but the difference between activism and policymaking, in my opinion, is policymaking, you have to take into account so many moving parts. And sometimes that includes compromise. Sometimes that includes involving other decision makers. It's an incredibly complex process when you really get into it. And to me, that's part of what makes it so fun. It's a big puzzle.
Absolutely. And when we talked about the lecture series earlier, we talked about the external speakers that we bring in, but no less important are the people who are here on this campus. And we've got some great faculty who have a lot to offer. So tell us about that.
Sure. So we have some really phenomenal projects going on campus that involve both faculty and students. For example, last spring, Dr. Pam Silver gave a talk about her SALT project, studying the impact of sidewalk salt on local waterways and watersheds. And what I thought was so inspiring about that event was not only did she give a talk, but then there were students who had their poster project set up. And this single faculty project has spawned dozens of student projects. And to see these students really doing, graduate level work in most cases at an undergraduate institution is, I think, fantastic. And I was really pleased that we were able to not only educate our university population about that project, but we had a ton of community members come in to that event and look at the posters and meet with the students. And what was really inspiring to me was to see the passion the students had for it. We were really able to connect, here's how scientific research connects with public policy, and they were beginning to make recommendations on how we can alleviate some of these environmental issues.
I remember when she came to me and started to talk to me about, I want to study salt on campus. I must say my reaction was, what? we've been throwing salt on the road for years. What's to learn here? Boy, was I wrong in that viewpoint. To your point, it really amazes me how this has taken on a life of its own, but how the campus has served as a living laboratory. How the students are doing research. And not only that, we've got our maintenance staff. People across campus are engaged in this project.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the students who are out there literally sampling snow, in increments from the sidewalk, sampling the, salinity levels of that, to maintenance, to I think just general awareness. I think most students would prefer that they not slip and fall on campus sidewalks. But, we really have to think about the environmental impacts of what that traction costs.
It does cost. And if you don't study it, and if you don't come up with better solutions, well then, shame on us, so to speak. Well, you're also developing this journal called the Barron Policy Review Journal. Tell us about it.
Sure, this is a project I'm really excited about. From day one, one of my goals here at the Policy Fund was to implement this. So we're in the development process. It's still being worked on. But the goal of it is to provide sort of a repository for both faculty and student research on policy issues. For example, if a student is working on a Council of Academic Advisors project, They can then take that memo or whatever the product of that was and work with a faculty member to sort of polish that for publication, and we will put it online as an online journal. So it's going to be a combination of both long and short form articles and student and faculty work.
Will there be some sort of peer review associated with it?
Yeah, so we have a number of faculty who are working on this. Dr. Lena Shishkoharnid in the political science department, and as well as Dr. Zachary Irwin, who's a retired political science faculty member. They're both working with students currently and actively to sort of refine their work and help them to produce things that are able to be published.
And do you see this expanding beyond the borders of Behrend? Is this something that people from other universities would want to publish in?
I would love to do that. I think initially it would be really great to reach out to the other four regional universities, especially if the content of the journal is focused on Erie-centric policy issues, which it certainly doesn't have to be. I mean, I think there's, as we saw with the Detroit Symposium, there's lessons to be learned from other communities and their policy issues. But yeah, I would love to see that happen in the future.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. We'll stay tuned and see where it goes. Erie is undergoes this revitalization. There is a big focus on attracting millennials. You are a millennial, is my guess.
I am.
You are, and the coveted millennials. So, you were recently very seriously, or very nicely named to Erie's 40 Under 40. And can you tell us what the significance of this 40 Under 40 recognition is? What's it mean for the community and for you personally?
I mean, it was a great honor to be named. You know, if you look at the applicants and the other people who are who were honored this year, I mean, to be named among them is completely humbled. But I think the biggest takeaway is how many people Behrend had on that list. I mean, I think Behrend had the largest share of people on that list, which I think is a testament to the sort of people that Behrend is bringing to the region and attracting.
We did, and you know, I'm really proud of the fact that as a university, I mean, Behrend is just able to bring, and I like to make this point when I talk to leaders, we bring a lot of people to this region who are making a choice as to whether or not they come here and stay here for the long term. And it's very important that we have a welcoming community where they want to stay. And the other thing about the 40 Under 40 this year is they added a celebration. I hate to focus on kind of the fun part, but I heard really great things about how they added the celebration and the whole community there came. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So I would actually rephrase it. I wouldn't call it a celebration. I would call it an experience. Mm-hmm. This was their sort of branding for it. It was the 40 Under 40 experience. So it featured, you know, local vendors and a lot of local food. They were actually giving tattoos away. You could get tattooed at this event, which was, it's a very millennial thing, isn't it? Yeah, so that event was really, really great. And I think, you know, Erie is sometimes labeled as a place where brain drain is a huge problem. And I'm not negating that that's an issue. But when you go to an event like that, it's really hard to come out of that and not feel positive about the future of Erie. If you look at how many people, you know, whether they're under 40 or you know, slightly above, doesn't matter. I mean, I think the talent that Erie's been able to attract in the last, you know, 5-10 years, it's astounding.
You also talked about Erie being a great place to live. And I noticed that you're a runner. Half marathons, full marathons in your future?
Only half marathons. That is my that's my peak. That's all I aspire to be as a runner. The half is good enough for me.
I want to thank you, Caitlin, for joining us today. But take a moment. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you think is really important that our listeners should hear?
Sure. There's one thing I just want to make sure that we talk about, and that is on January 12th, the Public Policy Fund is doing our last Women in Politics event. So it's a partnership with Chatham University and their Ready to Run project, which is not a running program in the physical sense, but it's a training program that teaches people how to run for office. So they do this in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and we're very fortunate to be able to bring it to Erie for the first time. So if you have any interest in running for office, you should check out the program and join us on the 12th.
All right. Sounds like a great program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again on Sunday morning at 6:30 for an encore presentation of the Business Spotlight.